Hello and welcome to the Voice of Intuition podcast. My name is Susan Jane and I believe that trusting your intuition is the best way to live your life with meaning and purpose. Each week you will hear about how you can connect, develop and trust your intuition. Through the wonderful array of guests we have on the show and my own personal experiences. Join me to understand how your intuition can guide you towards a life full of meaning and loving purpose. Hello and welcome to the Voice of Intuition podcast. My name is Susan Jane and I'm your host for the podcast. Now, today we have a wonderful guest on, Aaron Shelley. Now, look, this is one of those areas that we're talking about today that I remember going through corporate Australia, I have to say, and it's like you just don't talk about family and business together. Like, it just doesn't happen. You're either at home or you're at work, and there's none of that in between. And that's what we're going to be talking about today and how our intuition is going to help us there. We're talking about how we look at our family through the eyes of our business. And we have got the expert on all of this. And his name is Aaron. So welcome to the show, Aaron.
Thank you very much, Susan. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, don't worry. We're going to ask some really hard-hitting questions here. I'm going to try to anyway. But the first thing I want to do is get an understanding of who you are and how you got to where you are. Like, how come you decided to go and talk about family and business? Like, but let's start from the start. Where were you and how did you get to where you are?
Where was I? I started out my education in mechanical engineering. I did that. And then I kind of got frustrated with just the engineering and business integration. It didn't seem very good to me. So then I went and learned about business, got an MBA. And my wife and I, after the MBA, we decided to run an Irish dance business. I don't know if you're familiar with that, river dance. And so we had that business running in the background of the rest of my career. But then I worked for a number of smaller companies and I worked for Ancestry.com. And then I worked at a startup. And then I went to, I had this place where the startup didn't work. And then I was in a consulting phase where I was helping a guy write a book on entrepreneurialism and family. And I was just trying to help him. I thought I had come up with a better model than the one he was using. And so I decided to write about 50 pages of it, give it to him and say, hey, use this in your book. And he said, no, that's your book, not mine. So I didn't really ever want to write a book, but I just kind of followed the path that I thought felt good at the time. So I kind of wrote the book, had it almost done in about 2018, and then had an opportunity to work as a tech executive in a startup space where we helped contractors run their businesses. That lasted until just last year, in which case I had a time to step back. We took about $54 million in funding, and then I was able to, you know, exit and then get back to the thing that I thought was very important, which is, you know, working with families and how do we help those? Because I think family is really the pillars of our society. So the better we run our families, the better we're going to run our societies and the more happy we're all going to be collectively.
Okay. So you've gone through all these different stages, and I do know river dancing, and I used to be a dance teacher too 100 years ago. I'm really with you there. But when we're looking at you're looking at businesses and families, are you looking at running the family similar to how you would run a business, or are you looking at how you're living your life in your business and how that affects your family? Like, how is that connection between the two?
Yeah, they're both connected very strong. And I would say, I'm not saying to run your, you can't fire, I mean, you can get a divorce from your spouse. You can't fire your children. But when you look at a business, most businesses are kind of trying to look ahead a few years. Well, what are we trying to accomplish? What is our mission? What's our goal? And then you look at your yearly level, and then you'll break it down into quarters, and then you'll have a lot of these structural things that help you go about accomplishing your goals. And every culture, every business will have its culture, whether that culture is, you know, we need to be super innovative, which is a lot of what smaller companies that are trying to grow are, or we need to, you know, be super stable and predictable, which is a lot of bigger companies get into. And so every company has kind of its own feel of what it's trying to accomplish. And every family has its own ideas of what it's trying to accomplish. And it just uses a lot of these structures to align your, as I call it, the business model. But what is your strategy, your structure, and your culture? If you align your business model in your business or in your family, then you just get the results you want much more easily. Whereas if you ignore pieces of it, you just don't get very good results. And you often end up with fights, conflict, you know, those type of things.
I really like that. I think that's a great idea. And the thing is, if you're running it, not the same as a business, but you're looking at some of those models in the business and you start to put that towards the family, one of the biggest things that you're saying is that you're actually revisiting it every year or every quarter or and you're actually connecting with that, your family, in a manner that they are allowed to connect back to you as well, which is really brilliant, because too often it's like you just let the family be the family, and that can be challenging in some families. So how did you start to, I would imagine you've implemented this because you have written the book, you have to implement it. How do you go about implementing? Like, what are the steps? You've got me intrigued, Darren. You've actually got me really intrigued. I want to know.
Well, so if you look at those core places of your business model, your strategy, it's what is your, if you look at just your personal, every person has their own kind of business model. And then as you expand and you add other people, you get married or you stay with your family and you continue to work together, you're kind of expanding that group that you're working with, just like a business. And the first part of that is, what are you trying to accomplish in your life? What is you think your mission is? And I think the mission expands. All businesses that I've been with, when they're very small, their mission is really like, I just need to survive. Like, we need to make enough money in the business so that we can survive. And if we don't, we're going to go out of business. And I think it's very similar when we're in our early parts of our careers and early parts of our married life. You're just like, we need to survive. I need to find out, where am I going to work? What industries can I work in? What am I going to make? Where am I going to make money? But then your mission starts to, once you start to get that settled, then you start to look out a little further. You know, do I really just want to maximize money? And then you start to look at, no, I don't. I want to maximize relationships. I want to maximize these other things as well. And so that's where I think it's really critical to look at your strategy and say, like, what is my mission? What is my purpose as an individual? And then as you get bigger, what's our purpose together? And so if you start and have that good strategy, then you move on to your structure, which is, what are the things that we can do to support that strategy? And we talked a little bit about that. It's like our meetings, but then it's also roles, right? Like, if you and I were going to start a business, we wouldn't say, hey, you're gonna go make money and I'm gonna go make, you know, you're gonna be in sales and I'm gonna be in sales. You'd say, you're gonna go be in sales and I'll go be in product and I'll make the thing that you're gonna sell and we'll specialize. And so having different roles is important in a business because it allows you to specialize and do what you do best and often avoid some of your weaknesses. And so that's where you see, like with my wife, I do none of the technical or none of the dance thing of our dance business. I've never danced, done Irish at all. My wife did it for, I don't know what it was, 15 years before she started teaching. And we specialize. I take care of the technical stuff. I take care of the business. I take care of clearing the snow off the road. And she takes care of teaching the kids, managing the dance company, dealing with all the parents. That's her job. We specialize there. And it's the same way in our lives. My wife really cares about the food and the health of the family, kind of like the HR department in a company. I really care about managing the finances. So we have this specialization that we do. That's just super important to have an effective business. That's a structural piece. And then the last piece I talk about is the culture. You know, if you're in a high growth business and you really want to push, your culture is going to be about learning, buying new books, getting new ideas, being really open to new experiences. If your purpose is, you know, less aggressive in terms of what you're trying to do in a business, then you're going to be like, it's more about stability, making fewer mistakes. Like, if you're in a medical field, you don't really need to be super innovative and make a lot of mistakes. If you're a doctor making an operation, you in fact want to make few mistakes and kill fewer people. So the culture depends a little bit on what your mission and goals are. But if you can get those three things aligned with yourself and then also with your spouse, then, I mean, like, if I give you another example, I take care of the outside of our house mostly. That's my responsibility. She'll help me, but I take care of it. So when the house is leaking, like it did one fall, when the rain is coming into the house, I'm the one up on the roof trying to get everything secured so that we can take care of the leak. But then if you look at the inside of the house, making sure that it's clean, a lot of the decorating decisions, that's my wife. And so finding someone who's very complimentary in your family is very important. Finding someone who's very complimentary in your business is also very important. A lot of times you see people who want to do the same, you know, like a lot of times you'll see women like, I want to be the breadwinner. I want to go out and do that. And then there's a guy like, well, I'm going to go be the breadwinner. I'm going to do that. You're like, well, who's going to have time for the family? Who's going to have time to have children? Like the man's like, I just can't have the children. So if we both are, you know, if the girl really wants to do that, the guy might go, you're not the right person for me. It's not that you're not great. You're not lovely, beautiful, whatever, but we're not going to make a big, good business. And so that's where I think that we can take advantage of a lot of the business thinking. It's not trying to say everything in the family needs to be like a business. It's just using those same ideas. Like if you're going to start a family and the guy is like, I want to be super an executive and spend all my time doing these type of things. If you have a wife who wants to support that and she can, and also have children, then you can also be like, oh, okay, this is going to work together. There's just a lot of logistics that help there. Does that make sense?
I get where you're coming from. One of the things that I would probably question is that that's in a generic relationship. So mm-hmm. if you're looking at a generic relationship like that, that's fine. What happens when it's same-sex relationships? How does that work?
Well, that's where you get more complicated often, because you don't have the specialization naturally. I mean, I have a brother who's in that kind of space where he's trying to figure it out. And it becomes very difficult because you're going, well, if we're in a same-sex relationship, what is our purpose? A lot of they often can't have children, or it becomes very expensive to have children. And so then they're like, well, we have to build up a lot more money. We have to do a lot more of those things. But I've seen a lot of times where they're like, they don't have these children that really pull them together often. I mean, I had a friend I managed for, in one of the businesses. He and his partner had three children, and he was like, oh, they're my kids. And then the relationship kind of fell apart. And it's like, well, these are my biological kids. They're not yours. And so then the relationship disintegrated. So I think it can often be difficult where you don't have the children as kind of a pull, kind of magnetism holding the couple together. Because I think biologically, we're very driven to support our children. And if you actually look at the data, in our biology actually changes as men and as women when we have children. So if you don't have that biological shift, then it can actually change, or you might be making the decisions that you otherwise would be.
So you're saying that sort of you make different decisions, or are you? Okay, so you're making different decisions. But then when you're looking at it as a family concept, when we're looking at it in a business family concept, how do the children, are they like staff? Are they like referred to as sort of staff in the fact that you've got your the CEO and the CCO or type thing, you've got that the husband and wife, and then you've got the children. Well, are they classed as staff? How does that work? How does it look?
Yeah, I think a little bit. You would, just like you would, if you're the CEO of a company and then you hire a very junior level employee, you're not looking at that person like, I really hope these junior level employees are going to help me understand all these things in the market and they have so much experience. You're like, they have very little experience. There's definitely, you want to treat them well. You don't want to treat them like they're, you know, less than in this sense, but you're not looking to them as, oh, we need to understand them for strategic purposes and understand, you know, where they want to go. I think it's a lot around just as a group, like we are all in this together. So with my children, I look at it and say, I'm in there, I'm trying to help them be as successful as possible. So I had my one daughter, I have four children, three daughters and a son. And my daughter, she's doing nursing. And it was me saying, where are you going to be more successful? How do I invest in your, like I spent money and I spent my time, you know, helping her get the correct credentials, helping her go through college, because for the family, I'm like, how do we expand the family's resources? How do we expand the family's knowledge? How do we expand those, the skills and abilities of the family? Because I think it's not, I don't really look like the way that people have kind of, you know, you get married and then you spin off from the family and then everything's done on your own. I made a lot of really stupid decisions because I didn't take advantage of the expertise of my parents and or my in-laws in some investing I did or in some of the parenting that I did. I mean, I tried to take advantage of some, but there were just still some opportunities that would have, I would have been able to get a lot of value from them from.
But isn't that part of our learning experiences though? Isn't that part of us, how we learn and how we grow and how we develop? If we take on board what everybody else is saying and what everyone else is doing, are we actually living our life or are we living their lives?
Well, I think there's an interesting place where we often look at this from this very, especially in the United States, if you look at us culturally, we're very independent. I think Australia is very similar, right? We're these independent people, independence is highly valued. But then you start to look at it and you go, well, are we not, like we affect each other. If I all of a sudden go to prison, then it makes my children's ability to find a spouse more difficult, right? If I have more resources and I have more ability to support my kids while they're going through their college careers or while they're buying houses, doing certain investing, then I can actually make them more successful. So I think we've gone into this area where we've kind of unnecessarily decoupled a lot of families where we could get more value out of them. And if you look at a lot of the like Middle East, Asia, they're much more collective. So the family is much more supportive of the individuals and of the additional families. So I think it's just kind of towing the line. You do need, I agree in your terms of, you need to develop. You need to give kids their own space. But I think you also need to help them with your learnings. Like if you look at one of the biggest mistakes people will make in a business world, or the biggest one most people say is if you hire the wrong person, that's a horrible mistake in business because it just takes a long time to work them through. It's not good for them. It's not good for you. But then if you look at when you're trying to get married, a lot of people just like, when I got married, it was like, go get married. Like, what? How should I think about this? I didn't have what I was trying to do very much. I like had my religious group that I was like, well, I probably want to marry within that, but I didn't know how to filter for that. Whereas if you look in the business world, we have so much stuff on, you know, how do you find the right people? What values are you looking through? How are you interviewing them? There's all sorts of things like that, that I think can be useful in your family. Cause I think if you want to go live like a very entrepreneurial life, you need a spouse who's going to be able, who will deal with that level of instability. On the other hand, if you want to have a very stable life, like I've seen people who don't want to travel, and then you need a wife or a husband who's going to support that. And if you get someone who's like, man, I'm so cooped up, you know, I want to go travel the world, and their spouse is like, well, I don't want to travel at all, then it just creates this, in my opinion, unnecessary friction. So it's a lot about, if you can go through your personal values and understand your culture and understand your personal mission, then you can start to say, well, what person or what type of person would be okay and be happy with this, with me as a spouse, and then okay, happy with that life. I have a great friend who his wife, the CEO, he was a CEO, built this great company, and his wife, they didn't pay the mortgage for 6 months. She got a job just to support, just so she could have health insurance. There was like, she was just able to deal with a lot of these issues. Her power got turned off at different points, like making it work because there was so much instability because the entrepreneurial life is that way. But then I've seen other spouses where they just get divorces because they hate that.
So, but the way you're talking though, it's like you're not talking sort of family so much as you're talking about relationships. So before you go into that relationship, look at it like a business sort of sense, in the fact that are you ticking all the right boxes? Are the boxes being ticked that need to be ticked to create a successful business? So you're looking more at relationships rather than the family.
I kind of look at, to me, like the relationship is the base level of family. Right. If you and your spouse can't keep it together very well, then bringing more kids into it just creates more chaos. You know, if your value set is super conservative and your spouse's value set is super liberal. Then when the kids start to get around, then all of a sudden you often find a lot more conflict. Well, should we teach them these principles or should we go this direction? So there often becomes a lot of conflict. So yeah, in the relationship, there's definitely some issues there, but then there, that's the core of the family. It's kind of like the founders of a business. You know, if the founders of a business are fighting, it's bad for the whole business. Even if, and I've seen some where you have people yelling at each other and you're like, well, you're making money, but people don't want to be part of this business because it's, there's the friction, the conflict is just so heated. And so that to me is where it's a lot more about getting yourself on the same page and getting your goals on the same page. Because if you and your spouse, I mean, my spouse and I, we didn't do a whole lot of traveling until we had got ourselves fully out of debt. And my home at different points, I think a lot of people would have been like, well, I mean, we didn't have air conditioning. We had a swamp cooler, which is much less comfortable, especially when it gets up into the high temperatures. And yet my wife was like, yeah, it's fine. Just what we deal with. And so I've seen it where my wife has been a great support for me in my business expertise, and I've been a great one for her in our family business, the Irish Dance business that we run. So it's really about making the core of the business work well before you really start to go and expand that out with a lot of children.
And I agree with you. I just feel that with what you're talking about and where you're going, is you're still talking about people that are single rather than people that are married. Like if the listeners are listening to this now and they're saying, well, I've already got a family, I've already got children, I've already got a spouse, they may not be happy with how life is turning out. But it's not like you can sort of go, okay, let's cut this and, you know, put that aside and put that in the back burner and we'll start again. And this time we'll follow that. What, like, if people are in this sort of situation where they are having an issue, how is the book going to help them with that?
Yeah. So a lot of it's for you as an individual trying to figure out what your individual purpose is, because I feel like a lot of people go to work, but they have no real purpose. You know, they got married, they have kids, but you go like, so what's your purpose? What's your vision for your life in 5 years or 10 years? Well, I want to be successful and I want to retire. And you go like, why? Like, what's the purpose of retirement? Well, it just means not working. And everyone told me that was the goal. And so it's really like you as an individual, I've done some of the worst jobs. I mean, I've washed dishes, I've cleaned toilets, but all those things were on the trajectory of things I wanted to do, or helping me become what I wanted to do, whether it's going through college, getting my MBA, paying, growing the business, all of those things, they all, like, there's always pain and I guess suffering, or I don't know if suffering is the right word. There's always issues. It's always hard when you're trying to go through life. And if you don't have a clear purpose for yourself, it's rough. And I think a lot of people, sometimes they're in relationships and they really don't even have their purpose. And if you have no purpose, even if you had a great job that supported what your purpose could be, you can still be miserable. And so a lot of it's you as an individual and then you as a family coming together and saying, what are we together trying to do? And this is not a trivial exercise. It actually takes a good chunk of time because so many people have just kind of been on autopilot. You know, like, okay, I go get married, then I have children. It's like, but what is it you're trying to accomplish with yourself? What does a fulfilling life look like for you? And I think you can listen a little bit to your intuition. Like, well, what about this direction? That's how I did with my children. Like, what profession would you want to do? And listen to, like, does that feel good to you or does it not feel good? You know, I'm going to go into computer science. I talked to my daughter and she was like, yeah, maybe I'll do that. And I'm like, are you just doing that because of me? And she's like, yeah. I'm like, okay, you just want healthcare. And then you slowly get into it and you go like, well, her purpose is to, you know, heal people. And that's really what speaks to her. So then every time she goes and works in the ICU is where she's at right now. It's a bad job for a lot of people, but she enjoys it because she's fulfilling her purpose. And so I think a lot of it with people is trying to get together as a couple, if you are married, and go through and say, what is our purpose together? What are we trying to accomplish long-term? Because as you accomplish those things together, that really strengthens the relationships and it puts all of what you could call your suffering or your hardships into context. But if you're just kind of suffering or going through all this hardship, you know, your kids, I had a daughter who just broke her leg skiing, and that's going to cost a lot of money. And then she can't, you know, she can't do a lot of the things that she wanted to. Then you're kind of, if you don't have some context in, well, why were we skiing? Oh, it was just for fun. Or was it, no, we wanted to do this as an experience together as a family. There was some chances that it would happen and someone would get hurt, but we were fulfilling the purpose. Then even when those bad things are happening, you have some context to go through them. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Like, I get where you're coming from. The other aspect I wanted to say is that you're talking in a sort of a situation where, you know, people are more well-to-do than others. So it's great following your purpose, and I get that. And purpose can absolutely change as we grow and develop and as we get more understanding of ourselves. But what about those people that may not even have a roof over their head? You know, may be sharing a small apartment with three or four other people. It certainly might not be where their purpose or where they feel that they should be. But how do they move forward in the concept of the family flywheel?
Yeah, so you're getting into the next place. So if you look at we talked about the business model that's really the engine that creates success in your life. And so the business model is determining what you're going to invest in. And then I categorize these three different investment classes. Like, you can invest for money. Like, you know, if you're going to go spend your time, which I call a human resource, and you're going to go get money for that, then that's a financial resource. And then there's another type of resource called a social resource. And social resources are relationships. So to me, you can invest for money, you can invest for relationships, or you can invest, you know, kind of in yourself, whether it's your health or your abilities, your time, those type of things. And if you have a good business model, then you start to produce more results. Like, if you look at a company, and this is why the book is called The Family Flywheel, a company, if it makes good decisions and invests in good people, then those people can then make money. Now they have money and people, and then they can get a reputation, you know, go do marketing. Now they have money, they have people, and now they have relationships. And this is where you can have a flywheel effect. Right now you can take those people, money, and resources, and you can invest more and more. I mean, if you look at companies like Google, you know, they were worth about $1 million in 1999, but through the investments in their technology and in people and in their advertising and those type of things, now the company's worth, I don't know, $1.5 or $2 trillion. And this is the flywheel effect. It takes it to build on itself. So when people are not well-to-do, a lot of times what's happening is they're making what I would call poor investments, right? Are you investing your time in learning? Are you investing your time in relationships or working? What are you investing your time on? Or are you like, well, I just watch Netflix. Okay, well, that's a waste of time. Unless maybe you watch a show with a whole bunch of people, you're developing a relationship there. But if you're looking at how you're investing, your business model is telling you to invest your time, then that will actually make you more successful. That's one of the things where people look at it and they think success is if you gave me a lot of money, then I would be rich. Yeah. That's just stupid. Cause you're like, wealth is not, you don't. And there's a story I have in my book of this woman. Her dad died. She was given $20 million when she was 18. However, she didn't know how to use it. Her business model did not tell her what to do. So now she's been through four or five marriages. She's bought and sold companies. She had to go get a loan from her mom. Like, she didn't know what to do with the money. And that's the problem, is the resources are byproducts of a good business model. The resources do not create a good business model. And so that's really what you see, is if people don't know how to invest invest for resources, then they're going to continue to be quote unquote poor.
Yes. Okay. That now I'm really liking where you're going. Okay. So with it, what you're looking at now is, so it's almost going to the individual first and sort of going, okay, let's build this business model with this individual. So I'm going to start looking at how my life is and everything else, what I am doing, and relate that to that, your business model. So that gets me back in track. Then we go, okay, let's have a look at partner, spouse, future partner, future spouse, whatever it is. where are they sitting and are they in line with you or are you in line with them? Is there a mutual growth as far as the business flywheel goes? Is there a mutual growth with them? And I understand what you're talking about, Aaron, when you're talking about how you're investing your time. It's so important if you invest your time and you don't want to overload one side and not have it the others going too. So when you're talking about investing in finances, it's great to, if you haven't got a lot of money, put a little bit aside in the bank. Start to build up your finances. Then when you're looking at relationships, if you do want to go into sales or into some sort of area that you're looking at or some area that you like, build up relationships with people that are already in that area. Or I want to learn more about marketing. I got a job as learning to do marketing. I'm learning and getting paid as I went along. So I'm building up those relationships there. And then the final one was finance, relationships. What was the last one?
Personal.
So, and that's all about your learning. And as you were saying with the woman that got the $28 million, she didn't invest in her personal learnings. She didn't invest in who she was and how she could grow to be able to use the finances, to be able to, you know, she had the finances. She didn't have to invest in that. She got that, but she didn't have the others in place, didn't have the right relationships for it, didn't have the right understanding and learning. So we bring that down to the individual first, and that's what the book does. And then it takes it one step further. We become who your partner is, you know, whatever that looks like, and you get them on track too and blending. Then when you have the children, you've got the book there too to go, okay, how are you involved in this? How do they get ahead? Are they investing in their personal learnings like university? Are they investing in finance? Are they putting money aside? Are they learning part-time work so they know the value of money? And then the last one is, I've lost it again, time.
You have human resources, financial resources, and social resources.
That's right. Social, yeah, that's right. The other one was and let's face it, with university and when you're going through those sort of things, you do pick up great relationships. You know, you can have lifelong friends in that area that and might not be supporting you financially and they might not be supporting you in other ways, but emotionally, mentally, they can be a great support. So I really get where you're going with this. I really like how you've structured it and how you've put it together that enables people that are single to look at it, people that are, I'm going to say double, people that are in relationships, and then people with the families and how they can help with that. Is that sort of right? Have I got that concept right?
Yeah, exactly. That's the beauty of those different resources. If you understand that, I think most everyone is just equated money to investing. And yet that is not the most important part of the investing that you're doing. If you go to college, you're investing in your skills. You're paying money. You're spending time, those two resources, you're spending financial resources and that human resource of time to acquire skills. And to your point, also potentially acquiring relationships. And then you take that skill that you've developed and your time again, and instead of spending more time in the university, now you go to a company and you say, I have skills and I have time and I'm willing to trade it for money. And then now you have money. Now you're saying, well, now I have money and I have skills and I have some relationships, but maybe I'm going to invest more in relationships. This to me is where you see a lot of women go into marketing. And that is because marketing is about relationships. Right? It's what is your reputation? What's your brand? And how do you do that? My mom did not, she worked as a school teacher when she was young. And then my dad worked as a professor. Once he got his degree, she stopped doing school teaching. And then she was investing in our community. So when I needed a job, there were so many people. She's like, oh, this person needs a hole dug for a tree. Oh, this person needs some babysitting. This person needs this. It was so much, there were so many connectors because she was investing in all these relationships in our community. And so she had this massive pool of social resources. And if you understand marketing, you understand that even in the business world, it is very hard to value how much those relationships are worth. A brand like Nike, we put it on our financial balance sheet and we say it's worth so many billions of dollars, but it's really a guess because it's hard to quantify. And I think this has been the place where so much of what Western culture, especially in the US, I think Australia's gone similar way, where we've pushed people like, if you're not investing for financial return, if you're not making money, you're bad. You should be fulfilling it. Go be a big CEO or one of those things. But if you look at the family, you're saying, no, maybe the husband or the wife is investing in those financial resources, but now someone needs to invest in the social resources. Because what you find in the social resources, if you do not have good connections in your society, with your community, with your spouse, you start to see a damaging of other human resources. This is your mental health. People feel isolated. People feel sad. People feel anxiety and all these things when they're not connected. So if you lack social resources, it actually hurts your human resources as well. And so this is where I read a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and played a game, Cash Flow, where it talks about this flywheel effect in money. I make money, I buy more assets, I get more income, I make more money, I buy more assets, boom, now all of a sudden I'm wealthy. I tried to play the game. That's why we did the business. I tried to play my life that way. But then I took big risks and I invested in some real estate right before 2008 when there was a big real estate bust here and I lost $250,000. And then I was like, I put my family at risk. My mental health went to crap. And I said, wait a sec. I did not understand that I was going to be putting these other things at risk when I made these financial decisions. And almost all financial advisors are, well, if the emotional side is difficult, but you don't understand it until you're in it. And now you're like, now I have this debt load. And so after that, I said, my mental health and my spouse's mental health is worth more than making a return, a few hundred, a few thousand, whatever dollars more. At which case my wife and I said, we are paying all of our debt off. Even though every financial advisor will say, do not do that. You could make more money in the stock market, your home, you have a 3% interest rate. Don't do it. You could make so much more. Screw that, because they're not taking into account your mental health. For me, especially as the provider, when I made that decision, there was a lot of stuff. And I think if I hadn't had the right social connections to help me through that difficult time, I may have knocked myself off. Right. So that's the issue that you're not taking into account. If you underinvest in these other resources, like, oh, I'm a doctor, I'm going to go invest all my time to make my family so much money. And then your family doesn't know you, your wife hates you, you get a divorce because you underinvested in social resources. That's your own fault, but it's a sad reality that a lot of people do. And so that to me is I'm essentially trying to expand in the book to make a holistic investing profile that includes social and human resources and doesn't devalue those social resources, especially because so many people are finding themselves doing poorer. They're financially maybe have a little more money, but then their connections are so poor. They feel isolated. They have anxiety. They have, they're taking drugs, they're drinking, they're doing all these things to try to medicate themselves because they're so underinvested in social connections.
Wow, I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I could see the passion and I could see the understanding for it because I did the same. I did the cash flow game. I did Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I've been there, done that, know what you're talking about. And I kept on thinking, intuitively, I kept on going, that's okay if all you want to do is focus on money, but I didn't want to just focus on money or finances. I wanted to have that holistic approach. And you're almost saying, cut it into thirds in the three different areas that you really want to, that you'd need to invest in. And Rich Dad, Poor Dad, the cash flow game was all about investing in one section. It did do a bit of learning, I must admit, did a bit of personal learning. Yeah. And we did it as a group, so there was a little bit of social interactive, but it was just all focused on the money side of it. And so you lose contact with the other side of it. With the person I was with then, they weren't into money. They weren't into that side of things. I was going through a lovely big growth period of wanting to know more and that learning period. So I went into that. They weren't interested. And it was like, We weren't growing together. And they don't have to be interested, like you were saying. That doesn't have to be their interest, but they still have to have an understanding of it, still have to have a learning on it.
Well,
and as an as a yeah. person on their own, they have to know it. Once you become a group or a couple, then you can allow those areas to wean off a little bit, can't you?
Well, and yeah, I love cash flow, frankly. It's my favorite game to play because it teaches so many good lessons. I just think it's a little bit incomplete. And another story that I talk about in the book, which I think illustrates this perfectly, is about Mary Gates, Bill Gates, the founder of Microsoft, his mom and his dad, and how they did it. His dad was a lawyer. The mom got a degree in teaching. She taught in high school, or not in high school, in kindergarten level. And then when she got married to this lawyer, then she had three kids. She got out of the workforce, invested in her children and in the family. Her husband also kind of built his own legal practice. Then Mary decided, once the kids got older, I'm going to invest in social relationships. So she started to serve in her community. Well, she was on the board of the University of Washington, and she was also on the board of United Way. Well, the CEO of IBM also happened to be on the board of United Way. And that's one of the most important connections that Bill Gates had when Microsoft was working with IBM. So if you look at Mary Gates, if you were saying, oh, she needs to go back into the workforce, once her kids are done, start working for money again. Well, the dad was making enough money, so then the wife invested in the social connections, and that connection could have been worth $50, $100 billion to Bill Gates. So if you look at that, it illustrates you don't just want to invest in financial resources. Don't just spend your time for money. Even Rich Dad Poor Dad talks about invest in your education. But I think the thing that he doesn't talk about, I mean, he does talk about a little bit on the side, but it's also investing in those connections for yourself and for your community. Like Mary Gates herself, she didn't get this benefit besides her son becoming this massively wealthy person, but she didn't get that directly of, oh, now she's the CEO. It's kind of this generational thing that you often see, is like good decisions in one generation then compound into the next generation, which in some ways is interesting because it creates this level of inequality if you keep making generationally good decisions, right? One bad decision in a generation can destroy a whole family, can destroy all your wealth you've built up. But multiple generations can build up massive wealth. So I think it's like, what are you investing? And this is where, if you were in a business world, you would say, okay, we need money, but all we're going to do with money is reinvest it to either hire more people or to work on our social connections, our brand, our partnerships, and our other relationships, our sales and marketing. So when you look at it as a family, you should be doing the same thing. Yeah, we want money, but what are we going to use it for? Building connections or building the individuals? Because those two will then put off more resources. So that's why I love that example with Bill Gates, his mom, because most people are like, oh, he was this super great entrepreneur and blah, 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 and super intelligent. And we make up the stupid story without actually realizing the massive investment his mom made that was hard, not on the books, but that actually paid off so fully for him and for the family.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's really cool. Before we go any further, because we're getting low on time, if you want to connect with Aaron and grab the book, it is at the website, thefamilyflywheel.com. So you can jump on thefamilyflywheel.com and you can grab the book from there. I love how at first when you were talking about it, it was like, oh, I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not sure where I'm going with this. I was questioning it. But once we got into it, I understand that you're looking at a business just on yourself, then with a couple, and then as a family. And I love that concept behind it, because even though the family have got all these emotions and everything happening and all these things happening, you break it back down to that basic business concept, it doesn't make it so over the top. It makes it a little bit more logical, even though we get all the emotions that still go with it and all the other stuff that goes with it. It still gives you some logical steps to follow, which I really like. But we are getting really low on time. Any last minute words you'd like to say, Aaron, to the listeners?
I would just say, a lot of people, as they think through business, they'll be like, it's so cold-hearted and sometimes you fire, whatever. But I've actually seen, if you take these principles into your life with your spouse, quite often you have a vocabulary now to appreciate the contributions they're doing, right? Instead of being like, I've seen historically a lot of like men would go to work and then they would come home and their wife would have been investing in the children, investing in relationships in the community. And they would be like, well, what did you do? I made money and you've just been sitting here having a great time, but not being able to understand or talk about the investments they were making. But I think if you look at it holistically, then you can actually have a deeper and richer relationship and a bigger appreciation for the strengths of your partner, because you're like, oh, okay, you went to work and I know work sucks sometimes, but you stayed home with the kids and you did all these things to keep the house running and you had time with your friends and that sometimes sucks, but we both are in this together and we both appreciate the differences. And that to me is where in business, if you have a good, healthy business, the salespeople love the product people because they know, hey, this person's building and working with computers. And I hate that. I like working with people. So I get to do what I do best. And the person who's working with the technology is saying, I'm so happy that the salesperson deals with people because I hate that, but I want to deal with computers and I love building stuff. So you have this deep, rich appreciation for the differences. And so I think we're trying societally, it seems like we've tried to homogenize everyone and say everyone should do the same things. But the reality is it's such a richer relationship and a richer life if you focus on how do we exploit the differences and the strengths of each person and not try to say everyone needs to be the same. So I think it helps deepen our relationships if we use these principles and have happier families and frankly more successful financially, socially, and human resource-wise than we otherwise would be.
That is gold. Love that. It's respecting the others, respecting their powers, you know, and their things as well. That's beautiful. Thank you so much for being on the show, Aaron.
Yeah, thank you, Susan. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was cool. Stay there. Don't go away. I am just going to do my goodbyes. Jump on the website and have a look. It's thefamilyflywheel.com and have a look at it. Grab the book and just start. Be open-minded. One of the things I've always done with any books, with any podcast, is test the theory. Jump on, have a look, test this theory, because I reckon that's going to work. And it's not about being cold hard, like you said. It's about understanding who you are and what you like. Then understanding your partner and where you can actually really excel. If everybody's doing the dishes, then the lawn mowing isn't going to get done in your home. So we've got to make sure we can move those around. And I reckon this book will do that. So jump on and have a look. But that's it. That's all we have this week. I will see you next week. And I will say bye for now. See you later.